Hello and welcome everyone back. This is the ninth shiur, the ninth class in the 39 prohibited categories of created labor, also known as the Shabbat Crash Course. Tonight we will be finishing up the order of making leather. If you recall, the Mishnayot were divided up into four sections, meaning the 39 melachot, the 39 creative forms of labor that are prohibited to do on Shabbat are divided into four different sections. Related to the particular type of work that was done in the Mishkan, in the Tabernacle. If those of you recall, the idea behind that is that we make a connection to all that which is not allowed to be done on Shabbat to what it takes to do the construction in the Beit HaMikdash, for the Tabernacle, for the Mishkan. Okay, so tonight, let's begin with the first one for this evening. Hamocho v'ma'averet oro, in the language of the Mishnah, salting and tanning. Remember that these are categories, in other words, that there may be things that don't necessarily fit what you would think under the same sort of thing. I know the salting and tanning and all that sort of thing. Anyways, what is this? All right. What is meant by this category? It is the preserving of skins and hides, meaning any kind of raw skin. If it's cooked, it's not included in this sort of thing, but preserving skins and hides through curing, salting, tanning, and finishing. Three steps to the process. So anything that you'll be doing that is involved in this process of salting and tanning, and again, this finishing aspect of it, which is like oiling the leather and that sort of thing, will not be allowed. Now, if you recall, the reason for this particular part this particular melacha connection to the process is, if you recall, that the skins of an animal called a tahash, it was a special animal. Some people believe the unicorn. There are various other opinions as to exactly what it is. It was an animal that existed, at the very least, in the time of the construction of the Mishkan in the desert when the Jews were there, in order to use its skins to be placed, in other words, as part of the Kodesh HaKodeshim, so it would be draped over and everything. So, again, so it was the process involved in making those skins. Of course, the same process is used for the creation of for tefillin. The actual boxes themselves are made from leather. The parchment inside that's used for tefillin, for mezuzot, and for sefer Torah, these are all again made from leather. So therefore, all the parts in the process. Now, specifically, we ended off in the last class by talking about the idea of you have to remove the skin from the animal. So, of course, removing skin, in other words, from an animal, again, if it's cooked, it doesn't count, but a raw skin from a raw piece of flesh, this is going to fall under that malacha, under that rule. So once you've removed the skin, now you've got to begin the process of preparing it and bringing it into leather, and that is where the salting and tanning takes place. So with there are three parts to this, as we just mentioned before. To preserve the skins and hides, you first have to cure it, meaning you put it in some salt water brine solution for a little while. Once that part is done, then it's taken out, and then it's put into a more caustic type of material. So the caustic material, again, that's used, again, think about this. You're trying to take a piece of skin, and you're trying to preserve it from decay. It's the equivalent of sticking something in formaldehyde, and so that's exactly what's going on over here. Believed that dog feces was actually one of the caustic materials used in this. I mean, the smells involved in this whole process are horrendous. The Gemara in a number of places talks about the particular negative side to this particular profession. All right, then the third part of the process is after you've gone ahead and you preserve the skin, then you need to finish it. That means to say that you either oil it to, again, make it soft and so forth, or you're going to stamp on it, meaning you're going to apply pressure, and what that does is it makes the skin hard. So you can get this material that goes from being extremely hard to extremely supple, all based on how this process works now, meaning the salting and tanning. Okay, so how does this relate in terms of the practical laws that apply to us as to what we can and cannot do on Shabbat? So let's begin with the do's, as we usually do. Place a shoe tree back into a shoe. Now, if you happen to have a shoe that's been bent out of shape and, you know, doesn't carry its original form and all that, and you're putting a shoe tree in there in order to work the leather into a nice shape again, that would be a violation. But to return a shoe that you normally keep on a shoe tree would be fine. Interestingly, in addition to the concept of working leathers, there is something which is very similar to the process of leather, and that is the process of salting and pickling in general. So therefore, the rabbis made a decree that we cannot do any sort of pickling on Shabbat. So, for example, to go ahead and stick pickles into pickle juice on Shabbat, that would not be allowed. But this is pickles that have never been pickled, meaning cucumbers. To stick them into brine for the first time, that's a problem. But putting pickles back into the jar is fine because they've already been pickled. So again, so salting and pickling is going to be a problem. So from here, understanding this particular gzera, let's work through what's going to happen here. So salt for taste, heat right away a single vegetable on a plate or holding it in your fingers. Okay, so therefore, again, salting a single vegetable in your hand or on a plate with no other vegetables, I mean, an empty plate with a single vegetable sitting there, that's not a problem. I mean, this doesn't look or isn't anywhere related to the concept of preparing, pickling, and salting, and so forth. It's just a question of salting something for taste. Now, on the other hand, though, if you were to go ahead and you were to salt the vegetable because of the fact that you wanted it to be crisp, you want it to go ahead and sweat out the vegetable, so therefore it would have a nice little crispness to it. That is very much in line with the concept of, again, this tanning of leather. It's that same sort of process. And that would not be allowed. So therefore, taking that into account, understand that again. So therefore, the salting of a lot of vegetables at any time is going to be just that sort of thing and not be allowed. And any time we're talking about salting being permissible, it's only talking about salting for taste, not salting in order to change the nature of the vegetables themselves. Now, to dip a vegetable into salt and eat right away is also fine. Because again, it's not like you're preparing this or salting something. You know, if you've ever watched or seen the process of leather making, I mean, there's part, depending on what you're trying to do with it, they can take this rawhide and really salt it up, you know, caked in salt and so forth. Again, remove all the moisture. Once you take the moisture out of a piece of skin, it's not going to deteriorate. It's not going to break down, meaning there won't be any ability for the bacteria and so forth and all the other things that normally would, again, take a piece of flesh and bring it down to nothing. That's not going to work anymore without the liquids and so forth. So that's all part of that preserving process. So again, so taking salt and putting on a vegetable to sweat out the liquids is very much similar to this, and therefore the rabbis did not prohibit it. Now, we may not necessarily see what the big deal is. I mean, if I'm going to salt vegetables, am I going to come to salt, go ahead and salt flesh and so forth? You may not think about that because of the fact that modern day times we're not necessarily have the hobby of making flesh, you know, fresh leather in our backyards and that sort of thing. But historically speaking, there are many people that over history or many different, you know, times when that has been the sort of society we lived in, where a lot of this raw work was done by each and every individual. And therefore, it really could possibly work out that a person who got used to, you know, using salt on vegetables and things like that never thought about the idea of salting meats as being a real issue. So again, this definitely it fits into this. Okay, so what else can we do? Continuing with along that same vein, well, you can put salt on cooked vegetables. So certainly, if the vegetables have already been cooked, then there's really nothing to talk about in terms of this whole idea of preserving and salting. It doesn't have any really relationship to any of that. Putting salt on vegetables already in sauces or vinegar is the same sort of thing. Once you've gone ahead and you put the sauces and vinegar on it, or anything else for that matter, what happens is that any salt you're going to add might add taste, but it's not really going to, the liquids that are there are going to take away the ability for that salt to act as a means for crisping and preserving the vegetables and that kind of thing. Now also, putting salt on, say, a peeled cucumber would be fine. Now while a whole cucumber is an issue, because of the fact that that is how you normally pickle it. Well, one that has been peeled is not the way you pickle it, and therefore it won't have an appearance of pickling. You're not going to extrapolate from there anything. So therefore, again, a peeled cucumber is fine, I mean, for that matter. And again, all this is talking about vegetables which we regularly pickle. It happens to be, I had a tough time thinking of too many vegetables that we don't pickle. And remember, it's not just this. I mean, you walk into an Israeli restaurant, and usually you have, like, these, you know, pickle collections there, and almost anything you can think of is sitting in there. So if you had, though, something that would not be pickled at all, never be pickled, be strange to be pickled, that kind of thing, again, this would fit under a not the deuce category of being all right. Preparing a saltwater solution, preparing a brine, is actually also a problem. But this is when you're preparing a large amount. If you prepare just a small amount for right before a meal, so for example, on Pesach night, if your custom is to use salt water, then you know, instead of vinegar is the more common custom. But if you use salt water, then you could go ahead and prepare a little bit of water with salt in it for the Seder, again, to be used right then and there. That wouldn't be an issue. But again, to prepare any large amounts to prepare for the future, that would be an issue. Now, what can't we do? And we certainly talked about a little bit of it, but let's go on. Soften the stiff leather shoe by bending it up and down. And the same sort of thing. You know, you're working the leather. You're conditioning it. You're changing it. Certainly, oiling the leather is going to be a problem. You know, putting milk oil on it or anything else. Polishing is a similar type of thing. The polishing is a preservative, not just that it makes it look good, but also preserves it. Today, there's a lot of these silicone chemicals, you know, sponges that are imbued with silicon, that kind of thing that you put on in order to give a shine or something to a shoe or something like that. Same sort of thing. You know, those are all a problem. They're all part of the process of preserving and caring for leather, and you know, those are part of the salting tanning process and not allowed. We already talked about before, you can't start up a batch of pickles, that sort of thing. Salt a vegetable to crisp it, and any time, even the things that we said are permissible, if your purpose is for changing the nature of the vegetable, that's not allowed. Salting more than one vegetable at any time. I mean, even if you want to salt one vegetable on a plate, and there's other vegetables on that plate, you're not allowed to. Because inevitably, when you salt the one, it's going to get on the others. All right, so moving on to the next malacha, to the next of the creative forms of labor that are not allowed to be done on Shabbat, is once you've processed the leather now, and you want to make use of it, well, you probably want to remove any sort of hairs or anything else. You want to smooth it. You want to make the material nice and soft. Again, there's all different types of leather, all different types of textures that you want for leather. But the point is that in this particular malacha, and what comes out from it, it is the smoothing or molding of any surface. That's interesting to note. It's not just about leather. Remember, these are categories. So included in this would be anything, such as sanding out wood, or anything else like that. In other words, it doesn't have to just be something like leather. In fact, it includes, in other words, there's what's called a tolda, meaning a secondary category, of smearing. In other words, where a person takes something and he smears it out. In other words, applying pressure vertically and to the sides. That combination of pressure down and to the sides and spreading out of some material doing that would be concluded as a tolda, as a secondary category under smoothing and scraping. So what can you do? Well, you can use a very liquidy soap. In other words, given what we just said, this idea of smearing, so if you happen to have a soap which is viscous and thick and what have you, and of course, all the more so bar soap, but if you had something like that and you went ahead and you were to smear it, so very liquidy soap, there's no problem. It just, again, it pours. There's nothing to talk about. It has no real position, but other types of soap would be an issue. Dissolving a thick liquid soap with water to then use would also be okay. See, it's the actual smearing of the soap that becomes an issue. In other words, because that's where the problem is. But it's not diluting. Diluting is fine. So if a person, for example, was in a situation where he was in need of a nice liquidy soap, and he only had, for example, the thick concentrated dish soap that's out there these days, he can go ahead and squeeze a little bit of that into his hand or put some of that into a bowl with a little bit of water, and that will go ahead and dilute it. And once he's created this diluted liquidy solution, he can then make use of that soap, no problem. You can use baby oil. That's fine. But what happens in a situation where baby oil isn't enough and your baby, God forbid, is prone to diaper rash and things like that? You want to make use of something like Desitin. So what you can do is you can dab it on. In other words, you can go ahead and take a Q-tip or a spoon or something like that and go ahead and just sort of just, you know, put it on. Even though you're going to put a diaper on afterwards, for example, and it's going to smear out after on it. So that's not going to be a problem that, again, that the desiccant gets spread out, for example, by the diaper that's put over it or something else like that. Again, it's not the same process. Again, there's a lack of a combination of you applying vertical and horizontal pressure all at the same time. It sort of happens on its own. So other ointments, when putting an ointment on is permitted, remember that we talked about in previous classes the concept of various different types of refuels, various types of medicines and things like that, and the problems that occur on Shabbat with making use of any of them. But when the times are that, you know, infections, things like that, where it would be permissible, again, the same sort of thing. You can go ahead and you can dab some of that on. In fact, you can even to go ahead and squeeze out of a tube the ointment is not a problem. And many people don't realize that squeezing, in other words, something out of a tube is not a problem. There are other problems. For example, when we talk about toothpaste, which we'll talk about in a moment, but the point is that squeezing substance out of a tube is not really an issue. And again, a person can go ahead and squeeze it and just dab it onto something, wouldn't be a problem. Again, for example, an infection or something like that when there's a serious issue. In fact, you can place a Band-Aid over the abdomen, and that's not a problem either. And we talked about before, again, provided that you're careful not to break through any of the letters, and that's, of course, if you don't have any already pre-prepared Band-Aids, that you can open up the Band-Aid package and place the Band-Aids on. And in fact, one of the nice things about Band-Aids that I've noticed is that, generally speaking, they come with a very easy to pull, just pull the sides and kind of opens up, and you can slip it on without any issues and worry about going through the letters. But just something to keep in mind. Again, spreading butter on a sandwich. When it comes to food, as long as it's for the food's purpose, meaning for eating and use and so forth, then there's no problem. You go ahead and you can spread out and make use of food. So again, spreading butter, peanut butter, etc., everything's okay. Now, what can't you do? Well, what you can't do, as we've already mentioned, is sand wood. You can't scrub a pot with steel wool. Now, remember, steel wool is not allowed for other reasons as well. And that is, in other words, if you put water with the steel wool acts as an absorbent material, and therefore it is not allowed for that purpose, in other words, to be used. Scraping rust. Again, anytime you're going to go ahead and you're smoothing out a material, this is going to be an issue. Using hard or thick soaps. We just sort of talked about that before. Same sort of thing. In other words, the hard soaps, thick soaps, again, that's that smearing type of problem. Scraping mud off a leather shoe is going to be an issue, because as you use an implement to do that, you're going to go ahead and you're going to condition the leather, and therefore that also would not be allowed. You can't polish items, you know, silver polish, things like that. All these things are a problem. Scraping wax is an issue. Squishing putty is an issue. In other words, no more Play-Doh or anything like that, if you might have thought that's all right. In other words, these things are an issue. Applying lipstick or chapstick, be it cream or stick, meaning in both cases this is an issue, meaning they cannot be used on Shabbat. Applying hand, face, or rouge creams, things like that, also same problem. Applying petroleum jelly, this is also an issue. Again, if you had a very liquidy lubricant that you needed for something, it would be fine. But again, if a petroleum jelly or something like that, in other words, is again, it's got this thick nature to it, this is a problem. Applying desiccant or other creams in the normal way, that's going to be an issue. Now, here's the thing. Even though we've talked about before that spreading out food, in other words, being all right, but this is when it's food for food's sake. In other words, when we're talking about spreading it out to eat. But what you can't do is smooth out, for example, a mound of tuna. In other words, for many people, you want to go ahead and you want to serve a plate of tuna or egg salad or things like that, or for that matter, even the chont, and you want to make it nice. You want to smooth out the tops or the surfaces and things like that. That's not going to be allowed. Meaning, this is smoothing it for a decorative purpose and not for the sake of the food itself, and therefore still falls under the same concept of smearing. In other words, of this particular malacha of smoothing out surfaces, and therefore it's not allowed. Frosting a cake, if it's done decoratively, this is a problem. If you're just putting the icing, for example, on the cake, And again, you know, dabbing it on, or even going ahead and again smearing it on, for the sake of the fact that you want to eat the cake, and you have chocolate cake, you want chocolate icing, not a problem. But again, if you're going to go ahead and put some design work into it or anything else like that, that's not going to be allowed. Okay, moving on to the next of the melachot, of the 39 melachot, is the mesartet, which is scoring. Now, if you remember, this was interesting that the Mishnah had actually seemed to count, salting and tanning, which you saw before, as actually being two melachot. And the Gemara, though, says, no, it's really only one, and then it inserts this additional one into the framework of the 39. So what is scoring? Scoring, I mean, it was making guidelines for writing or for cutting. In other words, so if you're going to go ahead and do that, this is a problem. Again, so what can you do? Well, here's the thing. It doesn't really apply to food. So you could score a cake, maybe make little lines on the top, in order to ensure that the cake then can be divided into equal parts and every kid gets exactly the same size piece and nobody gets into a fight or anything else like that. You can fold the corner of a page to mark it for the future. I mean, even though that you happen to be making a line in the page as a result of that, its purpose is not related to, again, to cutting or to writing or anything else like that. You can fold a napkin into halves or quarters, and just to, again, to put it out on the table nicely. What you can't do, though, is turn around and make those napkins folded into all kinds of decorative shapes. My wife does all kinds of neat things with the napkins, and that's a problem. In fact, origami and that sort of thing, or paper footballs, which is real popular, unfortunately, using the rabbi's classes and so forth, certainly for multiple reasons this is not allowed, not just because of the fact that you can't be doing this sort of folding and what have you, making a football by folding it and stuff. So again, these are part of the don'ts, and continuing with the don'ts, you can't pull out your chalk line to go ahead and make a mark on the floor or something else like that, so creating plumb lines or anything else like that, those are all not going to be allowed. You couldn't even grab your fingernail and go ahead and make a line on the paper for the future for writing or cutting or anything else like that. You can't draw ruler lines, even though that drawing a line, when we get to the idea of ketiva, of writing, it's about writing letters and so forth, or symbols and things like that. Here, though, even though you're not doing any of that, but writing even a single line, which is an indicator for where you should write, is going to be a problem. So this is not all included. And in terms of the entire melacha as a whole, again, once you've prepared the leather and you've gone ahead and you've brought it to a condition to be usable, so you would score it in order to be able to make the cuts and so forth. Or if you're using it for parchment or something like that, you would score it in order to mark where you're going to write on it and that sort of thing. Okay, and the last melacha that we'll be looking at for this evening is v'mechatcho, which is measured cutting. In other words, cutting any object to a measured size. So again, cut up food into specific sizes is not per se a problem, but tearing open foods on their perforated lines to get access to them is also okay. So when you're talking about, again, this cutting up of foods or things related to foods, these rules don't generally apply. You know, so therefore opening up some sort of, like, you know, container or something else like that, even though it's marked, it really marked me, it's got little perforated holes or something to make it easier to open. All that's fine, because your whole intention is just to, again, cut in other words, not to cut on the measured line, or it's in order just to get access to the stuff that's inside. But in a situation that would be different than that, meaning where the cutting on the line would have some sort of functional purpose, then that wouldn't be allowed. So, for example, when you go ahead and you get these, you know, Kleenex boxes that have a perforated line within the plastic on the opening of the Kleenex box, in order so that you should cut through the perforated line, therefore creating a nice, neat little opening so you can pull out the tissues one by one. So that making use of it in that way, meaning pulling them out one by one and that kind of thing, that would not be allowed, meaning that would come under the idea of measured cutting, and that would not be allowed on Shabbat. And with that, we end the entire order of the making of leather, and Bezrat Hashem, with the help of God willing, next class, we will be continuing along with the laws on the next section, which are the laws of construction, and God willing, finish up with another one or two classes on the 39 Melachot. Bezat Hashem, God willing, with the help of Him and our efforts, we will go ahead and observe Shabbat with all the more zeal and all the more carefulness and see Mashiach Tzidkenu v'Yemenu v'Yemenu. Amen.